And now, it's BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Happy holidays, British Columbia, from the southern tip of Vancouver Island, north to Fort Nelson. We bring you our best to cap off 2023. What a year for us at BC Food and Wine Radio, with 25 cities across British Columbia enjoying the show each week. We thank you for your support, and we look forward to a fabulous 2024. Now, with Christmas festivities behind us, it's time to prepare for New Year's Eve. If you still need a last-minute sparkling wine for the big night, here's three ideas. Number one, this is a super value sparkling wine. Ferrari, it's Italian. Ferrari, non-vintage Brut. It's a Metodo Classico, so made in the Champagne method. It's all Chardonnay from Trentino, Italy. $33.99, nothing but class. The label, the wine, the flavor, you can't go wrong with that. Incredible buy at $33.99. From Champagne, I'm recommending the Piper Heidsieck Cuvée Brut 2-glass pack. Look for that in the store. It's $79.97, but you actually get two legitimate champagne glasses along with the bottle that you can share with someone special on New Year's Eve. So look for that. And, of course, Piper Heidsieck is also considered the nightclub of champagnes. So there you go. Number three, and this is for those who've got the wallet, let's go with the best, one of the best, Champagne Dom Perignon 2013, just been released. It's $319. It's about $12 an ounce, but there you go. It's a fantastic wine. That's the kind of wine you can just sip for an hour or two and enjoy that whole bottle and see what all the hubbub is about quietly with someone instead of, going crazy. Now, on the show today, Francois Lertan. He's the owner of Domaine Francois Lertan, Aurelio Montez. We're getting a masterclass on high-altitude wines in Carmenere. Laurent Drouin takes us to Burgundy for the intricacies of the vineyard and wine. But up next, Grant Stanley, winemaker at Spearhead Winery in East Kelowna, a fascinating look at Pinot Noir clones. It's our year-end masterclass 2023. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and we are set to go.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Your favorite wines delivered right to your door. It's easy when you become a Liber Estates Rebel. Rebel Wine Club members enjoy regular shipments of Liber wines for your cellar, along with complimentary tastings, VIP treatment at the winery, and more. And with easy and convenient online ordering, your wine will be at your door before you know it. Discover more at LiberEstates.com. Simply great wine.
Penticton, the hub of the South Okanagan. A place to fall in love with winter all over again. Enjoy mountain adventures and reward yourself after a day on the hill with a visit to one of over 80 area wineries, cideries, and distilleries, or our 8 craft breweries. Experience fantastic, locally sourced restaurants, too. It's the perfect destination for a relaxing winter getaway. Before you go, make sure to check the website for information on wine tours, tasting room hours, and highway conditions. Go to visitpenticton.com.
Attention wine connoisseurs. Iron Gate Auctions are bringing you the chance to indulge in some of the most exquisite back vintage wines from Canada's most exclusive private collections. Each bottle sold individually so you can pick and choose to your heart's content. With an average of 3,000 available per auction, there is something for everyone at all price points. And the best part? Inexpensive temperature controlled delivery available right to your door. Visit irongateauctions.com to start bidding now.
At Noble Vines, they believe the best brings out the best. That's why they take only the most admired vines to develop their wines, including the 242 Sauvignon Blanc, which originated in Bordeaux, France. These superior vine stocks adapted well to their premier vineyards in Monterey, California, producing a medium-bodied wine with bright acidity, zesty aromas of ripe lemon, and flavors of golden peach with lime. Available exclusively through BCL Select at your local BC liquor store. Find out more at noblevines.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi. Don't believe me, just watch.
Hello, British Columbia, and our very best holiday wishes to you from our team here in Vancouver. We trust you had a fabulous Christmas. Now it's on to a full-on New Year's preparations for the big night on Sunday. Are you going out for dinner? Or are you, like many, staying in on New Year's Eve? Have you set aside an extra special bottle to open on New Year's Eve? We hope so. But today we're looking back on a fantastic year on the show with a master show of master classes led by some inspirational wine folks that we've met throughout the year. Now, our next guest leads off the show. He's from the Okanagan. Grant Stanley is passionate about Pinot Noir. He's leading the charge at Spearhead Winery in East Kelowna. Grant is both an educator and student when it comes to Pinot Noir and has a lot of experience in nurturing the growth of Pinot Noir clones. In this conversation, we go deep into the unique characteristics of several Pinot Noir clones and how they can affect the taste of your Pinot Noir. Here is Spearhead winemaker Grant Stanley. Grant, how are you today?
Excellent. Thank you, Anthony. Nice to hear from you.
Great to catch up with you. You know, one of the things I like about early harvest is people are around to speak. So have you've been done for a bit?
Yes, we're actually just in the process of barreling down the Pinot Noirs, which is, you know, insane to be doing that in October. It's usually well into November before we're doing that. But this year we began, I guess, about a month earlier than usual, which a huge surprise. But and even at that stage, you know, it was amazing how ripe the grapes were. It's there was tons of heat units here this summer, and ended up having an excellent harvest. A good chunk of the fruit, or a majority of the fruit in here, came from our growers in Summerland and the Naramata Bench.
Right on. Well, I thought today we could have a little master class on Pinot Noir clones, just for people to understand a bit more. But just before we start, you have a new sub-app there. So let's tell people where you are and how you're, what you'll be calling your wines now that are grown around the estate.
Yes, well, that's very timely because I just did an event with my colleagues from Tantalus, David Patterson, and then Taylor from Cedar Creek just the other day. So we had a chance to present wines from the two new appellations. We originally were aiming to produce one or have one general one, but they found that the lake influence was hugely significant. And so we ended up with two new sub-GIs, and it's the South Kelowna Slopes, and we ourselves are up here in the East Kelowna Slopes, just overlooking Kelowna. And, you know, we will be, you know, obviously my program, I have, you know, sourcing from vineyards, as I said, all the way down to Summerland and Naramata and the Boucherie Bench. And so we're dealing with, you know, multiple GIs, and we certainly plan on declaring that in all the bottlings in the future.
Okay, well, let's talk a bit about clones. I don't want to get super technical, but for people who just want to understand why we even mention clones, let's talk about Pinot Noir and how the clones work and what you're doing with them.
Sure. Well, clones, you know, for the layman, there's nothing kind of genetically modified or, you know, deeply scientific about them. They really are just, you know, fantastic vineyard material from great and generally famous vineyards that have a reputation for producing great wine. Nurseries get a hold of these clones. Usually they come through a form of a vine improvement group, like, for example, the University of Dijon in New Zealand. It was just the straight, you know, New Zealand Vine Improvement Group. And it's effectively a way to improve or continually improve the breed of Pinot Noir worldwide.
So
the French have been doing this for years, and we are able to import those clones directly from France. The nurseries obviously bring them in. My experience with them was that there's, you know, some older clones, the Pommard clone and the Badensville clone were the foundation clones for, you know, many Oregon and California Pinot Noirs. And then, of course, we had the Dijon clones, which came in and were really produced for winemaking as opposed to viticulture because, you know, they had super, super small berries, you know, really concentrated flavors. They all have very romantic names, as you can imagine, you know, the 115 and the 667 and the 777. You know, they're really just numbers that were, you know, labeled to them after they were collected from the vineyard and nurseried.
Yeah,
we have about well, we used to have more. We had about eight different clones here on site planted at the Spearhead home block. And now we're down, we've actually, you know, have less than we had before because we imported some California clones that didn't necessarily grow too well here in the Okanagan.
Yeah.
And so those are gone, but we love the 828. And I have a little bit of a history with that clone myself, that I imported that clone when I, during my tenure at Quails Gate. And it just suddenly, you know, popped up on the approval list. And so we brought it, I brought it into the country and we, planted it, pretty widely over a few acres. And now it has become, you know, a really top Pinot Noir clone, here in the Okanagan. And, this year I made, a pure 828 clone. It's not the first time I've done that. I did that a decade or so ago as well. And a couple of years ago here, but you know, it's just a great standalone clone that makes good finished wine on its own.
I'm speaking with Grant Stanley. He's the winemaker at Spearhead. I remember the original 828 you made, which was quite a big, sort of a husky wine, but this one is just gorgeous. I had a chance to go through it this week. It's just been released, and it's at a quite a modest price, too. I believe it's like $45, if I'm not correct, or is it $65?
Yeah, good to hear you say that's a modest price. Well, you know, prices are moving up around, around the valley, in particular for Pinot, with the high demand and the high cost of the fruit and the high cost of growing the fruit.
Now I want to ask,
I want
to ask you a question. So you mentioned the Pommard clone, and like I'm thinking, as these clones age and say they're in the ground for 20 or 30 years, it could become the Spearhead clone, could it not? Like from your region,
absolutely.
And that would,
I mean, they morph, or you know, they basically become part of your site after they they leave their teenage years behind and become more mature. They really lose clonal identity, and they literally become, you know, more suited to the place. They evolve and adapt to the place, which is what Pinot Noir is all about, really.
Yeah,
ever changing climates and ever changing weather events cause us to have multiple clones in our vineyards so that we can kind of protect ourselves from you know, cool years, hot years. Also, it's great to have a nice variety when you come to the blending.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing mostly, as you know, I'm doing mostly single vineyard wines now.
Yeah.
And within those vineyards, you know, generally they have, you know, at least two or three different clones that are blended together to make more complex wine, more ethereal wine than a single clone expression.
Yeah. I don't want to run out of time, but if folks go to spearheadwinery.com, there's a number of wines now that are available online. Again, at some very modest prices. So some of the wines that, you know, I really love that you're making, like the Clone 95 Chardonnay. But just tell us a little bit, because we're sticking with Pinot. So you have Coyote, you've got Golden Retreat, you've got Saddle Block. What should people know about these, or the differences? And then the Cuvée, which is a very interesting wine as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have evolved in terms of our fruit sources as well. You know, as you know, Pinot Noir is in super, super high demand here. Mm-hmm. Up in the valley, and so you know we've actually acquired two new vineyard sites, and we're now producing wine from a beautiful vineyard called Jagged Ridge that'll be coming out in the near future in the Naramata Bench, and another great vineyard called the Blueberry Hill Vineyard, which is a fantastic vineyard in Summerland. So those are two new single vineyard wines that we'll be coming out with. The others are available still in the wine shop. You know, generally most of the Pinots are sold out here pretty quick here, but I believe that there's still some 21s available.
Yeah, there are.
And and you know, the program really is that, you know, we have these multiple sites that we're working with, and we literally separate them out and try to, you know, express the site and the farming as much as possible. In each bottling. And so we're generally producing about six Pinot Noirs. And you mentioned the Cuvée. The Cuvée is the one that I get to play with the most because I get to select from across all of the vineyards what I think is going to be the best blended wine. And it's usually only about 14 barrels. It is our, you know, our pride, our top wine.
And you actually, and I didn't mention the consensus, but you bring in your club members and do a blending with them, and they actually get to put a wine together, which does quite well, by the way, when it's tasted blind out in the marketplace.
Yes. Well, last year it was our platinum at the National Wine Awards, Tony, and We are very proud of that. And of course, I get to defer responsibility to the wine club members with their selections. I literally just put the wine together as they taste it. And, you know, I don't let them mess it up or anything.
Yeah.
But they are, ultimately, I give them a choice of 10 wines and they pick their top four. But all 10 wines are good.
Yeah.
So they can't mess it up. Just select what they like. They can't mess it up. But they're extremely proud of their efforts, of course. And we have them to the winery, all the wine club members, or as many as possible once a year to conduct that blending exercise. And last year, of course, there was, you know, lots of hooting and celebrating based on the fact that they received the only platinum.
Grant,
it really means that I should probably give them, you know, even more responsibility in the other wines as well.
Maybe play a little more tennis or something. Listen, Grant, that's how fast the time goes. But just before we run off, it's been a tough year. What do you think about your vineyard next year? You think you're going to have a pretty good recovery rate, or is it still going to be a struggle?
No, you know, we are in the wine industry, we are always increasingly optimistic of the future.
Yeah.
As I say, the weather and, you know, where we grow Pinot Noir worldwide is always on the edge. We need cool and we need warm in the same site in order to really preserve the fruit. And so we do. We have tricky harvests and tricky vintages. The last couple have been really tough. But we're in a bounce back mode for sure. We're hoping for, you know, no nasty minus 30 cold events in November and December. And once we get through that, we're retraining a lot of trunks this year, replanting the areas that were hit hard in the last couple of years, and looking forward to getting back to full production.
Right on. Grant, thanks so much. Fantastic to talk to you. Lovely seminar, a masterclass in Pinot Noir clones. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure, Tony. Look forward to seeing you again soon.
That was Spearhead Winery clone guru and winemaker Grant Stanley. Up next, our year-end masterclass continues as we head to Burgundy with Laurent Drouin, fourth-generation family member of Maison Joseph Drouin.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Your next corporate event or retreat deserves the best. The Watermark Beach Resort. With conference spaces to host large or small gatherings, they can create your perfect event or gathering. Enjoy the culinary excellence of 15 Park Bistro, open daily for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Make sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook at 15 Park Bistro for the latest updates on their brand new dinner series. To make a reservation or learn more about events at Watermark, just go to watermarkbeachresort.com.
Visit Penticton this holiday season for mountain adventures and South Okanagan wine. Enjoy champagne powder and après ski at Apex Mountain or Baldy Resort, or step into cross-country skiing at Nickel Plate Nordic Center. After a day in the snow, slow down and experience one of over 80 nearby wineries with an intimate winter wine tasting. Before you go to Penticton, make sure to check the website for information on wine tours, tasting room hours, and winter highway conditions. And for more trip inspiration, go to visitpenticton.com.
At Noble Vines, they believe the best brings out the best. That's why they take only the most admired vines to develop their wines, including the 242 Sauvignon Blanc, which originated in Bordeaux, France. These superior vine stocks adapted well to their premier vineyards in Monterey, California, producing a medium-bodied wine with bright acidity, zesty aromas of ripe lemon, and flavors of golden peach with lime. Available exclusively through BCL Select at your local BC liquor store. Find out more at noblevines.com.
Join Anthony Gismondi and BC Food and Wine Radio at the 45th Vancouver International Wine Festival, February 24th to March 3rd, 2024. Discover Italy at the International Festival Tastings, featuring 149 wineries from 12 countries. Tickets are on sale now. Plus, get a free tasting ticket worth up to $135 when you book a downtown hotel via StayVancouverHotels.com. Don't wine and drive. The festival runs February 24th to March 3rd at the Vancouver Convention Center and other venues. Full details at vanwinefest.ca.
This is BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hey, I just met you.
Hello, British Columbia, wishing you a stellar new year. And here's to you celebrating with special friends and a family and a special bottle of wine. You know, if there was ever was an open that bottle night, it's New Year's Eve on Sunday. Now on the show today, we wrap up 2023 with some of the best masterclass discussions that we broadcast this year. French winery Maison Joseph Drouin is led by the fourth generation of the families, Philippe, Veronique, Laurent, and Frederick Drouin. With more than 193 acres of vineyards, Maison Joseph Drouin is one of the largest wine estates in Burgundy. Now, it was founded in 1880, and the estate owns vineyards in Chablis, the Côte de Nuit, Côte de Beaune, and Côte Chalonnaise, as well as the Willamette Valley in Oregon. Drouin is also one of Burgundy's most important négociants and the perfect person to explain the intricacies of Burgundy's vineyards and wines. Here is fourth-generation family member Laurent Drouin. Laurent, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Anthony? Good to speak to you.
I'm very fine. I'm very happy to be talking to you today. And I thought we'd start out to talk a little bit about Maison Joseph Drouin in Burgundy. So let's start with where you are and how the company is formed or was formed.
Well, I would say we're 143 years old. So it was founded in 1880 by Joseph Drouin, my great-grandfather. And he started as a négociant and was quite successful actually doing so. And then in 1918, Maurice Drouin took over, his son, my grandfather. And Maurice started buying vineyards in 1921. So the birth of the domain of all the vineyards we own today started with the Beaune Clos des Mouches in 1921. And obviously, Maurice developed the company and started buying more lands there and there whenever he could. Wartime was kind of a tough time. And 57, my father takes over, continued to expand it, went to Chablis, and in the mid-80s went to Oregon. That bold move to invest over there. And I would say, voila, now the company, and I would say our passion is split between the four of us. I have three siblings, Veronique, Philippe, and Frédéric. And now the next generation, so what we call the G5, has joined us in the name of Lorraine, Veronique number one. So we own today a little bit more than 90 hectares in Burgundy, from the Côte Chalonnaise all the way to the Côte de Beaune.
Wow, that's a lot. Well, I wanted to ask you, I wanted to just ask you, because let's say, you know, for most of North Americans, people see a winery, they go there. The wine is grown there, made there, produced there, and bottled. But in Burgundy, it's different. You're not just a winery. How would you explain the whole situation of being a négociant, winery producer, etc., that's understandable to us?
Mm-hmm. Well, we are what we call producteur négociant éleveur, a propriétaire négociant éleveur, sorry. Meaning we own vineyards and we produce the wines of our own vineyards, as I mentioned, the 90 hectares. And we also, the négociant activity is based on pretty much grapes that we buy from other growers. So technically we do not own the land. And with some of them, so we buy their crop and we produce the wines out of that crop. And sometimes we buy wine in bulk and then we do the aging in our cellars. So that's the négociant activity, which is completely different than what it is in Bordeaux. The Bordeaux Chateau are selling directly to the négociant, and then it's all sold on the market. So propriétaire négociant éleveur in Burgundy, which is what we are, means owning vineyards and also producing wines out of vineyards that you do not own.
Hmm. Okay, I like that.
I know. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No. I know it sounds sometimes a little complicated to understand, but it's fairly simple. Whenever it says domain on the label or récolte du domaine or propriété of, for us could be famille Drouin, that means it is coming from our vineyards. So some of the large producers in Burgundy are not only négociants, but they're proud to be propriétaires as well.
Yeah, our guest is Laurent Drouin. We're talking about Burgundy. Just to finalize that point, by the way, if you've been in business for over 100 years, I don't imagine that there isn't much that you don't know about the vineyards, the other vineyards that you work with. So we can expect that the same sort of care and attention goes into those wines anyway.
Indeed. And you're right, Anthony. Bottom line, the wines have one thing in common, and it is the name Joseph Drouin. And we have to make sure that what's in the bottle will truly reflect our passion and our dedication to express all the various terroirs of Burgundy. And obviously, it starts with the way the growers are farming, the way they're picking, and if they have vinified, and before aging, the way they vinified. So we, I'm not going to say we know every square inch of Burgundy, but after 143 years, I think we know quite a lot.
Quite a lot.
That allows us to, yeah.
Yeah. How would you explain the hierarchy also? I love to get this information out to young people of Burgundy. So, you know, you talk about regions and appellations and vineyards. How is Burgundy set up so that people can understand what's going on?
Well, I'm going to say it's very simple. From one location, like if I take a village, for example, and then within that village, it's surrounded by vineyards. And some of those vineyards are well located and are very well located. And it is what we call the Grand Cru. And then just below, vineyards could be pretty well located. And that would be Premier Cru. And then some are a good location and they carry the name of the village. And that's the village level. And then at the bottom, there is what we call the more regional wine, meaning the Bourgogne Rouge or the Bourgogne Blanc. So basically, you have four levels: Bourgogne Rouge, then village level, then Premier Cru, then the Grand Cru. It's that simple.
And you're set up in Beaune. You're set up in Beaune. So why don't you walk us through maybe that hierarchy again with some names that are in the marketplace? Like, what is the? There's a Bourgogne, obviously, here from Drouin, but what is the village wine that you have?
Yeah, we're in the appellation of Beaune, but so you would find something like, indeed, like Bourgogne Rouge, and then moving to a village level, for example, a wine's called Volnay or just Beaune. And then higher than that, there would be a Premier Cru, like Beaune Premier Cru, Clos des Mouches, which is one of our flagship wine. And unfortunately, I cannot go to Grand Cru because in Beaune itself, in that appellation itself, there is no Grand Cru. So you have to go in the Côte de Nuit for that.
And sure.
But I know it sounds very serious, but actually it's kind of fun to when you start digging into the Burgundy, you always have to remember from who's the producer. You know, there is only one château, one grand château, let's say, Aubryon. But in Burgundy, for a village like Beaune, you have more than 200 different producers because the vineyards are all spread out and in the hands of several producers. So it is. But on the market here in B.C., you do find in both the whites and the reds, you do find Bourgogne Rouge, Bourgogne Blanc, you find some Chablis. And some Chablis Premier Cru, and there is also the Chablis Grand Cru. So Chablis covers all the hierarchy of Burgundy.
Right on. We're speaking with Laurent Drouin from Maison Joseph Drouin. Laurent, a lot of talk about young people today not engaged in the wine business. What kind of a challenge is it for Burgundians to speak to a youthful market?
You know, as a traditional region, we tend to have a traditional message and we try to find a traditional angle to speak to whoever we want to speak to. But we have to speak the truth and we have to try to be a little bit more simple in the way and in a fun way as well, to the new generation. I think they're very sensitive on and to the authenticity of the message. They can listen very seriously about what you have to say when you start being technical, but they want to keep the fun as well. You know, I enjoy a good glass of Burgundy with a slice of pizza, and this is the kind of thing that we can say. But for some of the Burgundians, they remain so traditional, and maybe a little bit of the French arrogance sometimes. They are, no, you cannot do this wine with that kind of food. You have to do this and this. So the challenge is trying to capture the attention of the young generation, which I believe is completely open to whatever you have to say, but you have to say kind of the fun way on a deliver the truth and be authentic.
Yeah, I like the sound of that. Well, we love to drink Burgundy, and I guess part of that question is that, you know, often people use the word Burgundy and they toss it around, but unless you're drinking it, it's hard to understand it. Could you, very briefly, I know it's a tough question, but if we talk about the style of Burgundy, which is red Burgundy Pinot Noir versus, say, New World Pinot Noir, how would you compare the two different styles?
Well, the two different styles between, I would say, New World and Old World, even though I don't like to say Old World, but more traditional. Burgundy is more on the for the reds, more on the elegant side, maybe a little lighter style. The tannins could be sometimes get confused with some sort of an earthiness. When the wines from the New World are a little bit more intense, a little bit darker, a bit more fruit forward, sometimes fruit bomb, even though that is fading away. So elegance is definitely what we try to get. And purity is another thing. It's when it comes to Burgundy, if you're looking for something big, bold, heavily extracted, no. But you're looking for something pure, precise, well-defined, very elegant. That's where it is. And those are food-friendly wines, meaning you can get that with food, but you can also enjoy those wines without anything. And that's the joy of most of those wines.
That was Laurent Drouin. Up next, our master classes continue with Chilean Aurelio Montes Jr. Find out how a humble dream about Carmenere became a reality of excellence in Chile's Colchagua Valley.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Visit Penticton would like to wish you and yours a joyous holiday season. If you're traveling to Penticton over the holidays, you'll find no shortage of festive fun and winter activities to enjoy. From the 170-foot Christmas light tunnel and outdoor rink downtown, to snowshoeing, skiing, hockey, and more. On New Year's Eve, celebrate in town and be sure to check out the fireworks. Enjoy your holiday and make sure to come back every year. For trip inspiration and to plan your vacation to Penticton now, go to visitpenticton.com.
It's time to think turkey. Your BC turkey farmers work hard all year to bring high-quality products to your table. Whether it's a weeknight dinner or special occasion, turkey is always a delicious source of lean protein, and you can't forget the leftovers. With a great meat-to-bone ratio, you get a great value and multiple meals. So the next time you're wondering what to serve, think turkey. Find recipes, info, and more at bc.canadianturkey.ca.
Escape to Tin Horn Creek Vineyards on the captivating Gold and Mile Bench in the heart of Oliver's Wine Country. Their wine shop awaits you Thursdays through Sundays from 11:30 to 4:30. Embrace the season with their Blanc de Blanc Sparkling, adding a lively note to your winter wanderings. Explore the wonders of the South Okanagan, where nature's beauty meets the art of winemaking. Plan your visit at tinhorn.com. Ready to welcome you.
What happens when you combine the finest wine grapes with a uniquely rocky terroir? Clos du Soleil invites you to discover the answer. Located in the heart of the Similkameen Valley, Clos du Soleil have dedicated themselves to crafting wines that are a true reflection of this wild and beautiful place. Elegant, ageable, and authentic. Clos du Soleil, where the spirit of the Similkameen speaks through every bottle. Available at closdusoleil.ca and fine restaurants and wine stores near you.
Your next corporate event or retreat deserves the best. The Watermark Beach Resort. With conference spaces to host large or small gatherings, they can create your perfect event or gathering. Enjoy the culinary excellence of 15 Park Bistro, open daily for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Make sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook at 15 Park Bistro for the latest updates on their brand new dinner series. To make a reservation or learn more about events at Watermark, just go to watermarkbeachresort.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Happy holidays, British Columbia. Joining us now is Aurelio Montes Jr. It's our masterclass year en wrap for 2023. Chile is truly a remarkable destination on the global wine map. It's in a unique geographical setting with the striking Andes Mountains to the east, the cold Pacific Ocean to the west, the Atacama Desert to the north, and Antarctica to the south. Now, these factors have prevented the phylloxera louse from taking hold in Chile and, in effect, allowing the Chileans to grow ancient ungrafted vines such as Carmenere with little concern for the pest that wiped out the rest of the world's grapes in the late 1800s. Here's our Carmenere discussion with Aurelio Montes, Jr. Great to see you.
Great to see
Welcome
you.
Welcome to Vancouver again. So good to see people back.
Definitely, yes. It's always a pleasure to come here, especially when the climate is so good.
Yeah. Well, I was excited to talk to you about Carmenere, and then all of a sudden you brought a new Carmenere to town, too. So I thought, well, why don't we just sort of go through the story and the lineup at Montes?
Yeah, well, Carmenere is a great grape. It's an amazing variety that mainly grow in Chile.
Yeah.
And we have been studying, we have been researching about this grape for 20-something years.
Mm-hmm.
And so every year we try to find a new place, a new terroir for the Carmenere. So if you go back to the history of the Carmenere, we have three different type of Carmenere. Carmenere, as you know, is one of the most complicated grapes to grow.
Yeah.
Because you need to have a specific type of soil, and then you need a specific type of weather. So, for example, here we have the Montes Alfa Carmenere.
Mm-hmm.
Montes Alfa Carmenere is a blend of different places,
mm-hmm.
okay, different vineyards, even different terroirs.
Yeah.
But what I want to produce here is a very friendly, spicy, very soft, easy drink Carmenere.
Yeah.
It's not a single vineyard, but it's a really great, if you want to learn about how tastes Carmenere,
yeah.
For me, the Montes Alfa Carmenere is a really good example.
And Carmenere is an old Bordeaux variety that they don't actually grow anymore, or that very little of it at least.
Exactly, and even other countries have tried to produce Carmenere and have been impossible, because the problem is you need a really long autumn.
Yeah.
And long autumn without rain. So that's the most complicated part.
Yeah.
And in Chile, the only few places in the world that you have a long autumn, no rain, mm-hmm. so you're able to ripe as much as you want.
Yeah. The Montes Alfa Carmenere is a nice introduction then for people to get used to the wine.
Definitely, yes, because it's very friendly, it's really soft tannins. Here we added a little bit of Cabernet Sauvignon, around 10-15%, depending on the year, to make the wine a little bit rounder, long. But it's a wine that is a good example to, if you don't know anything about Carmenere,
go
for the Carmenere Montes Alfa.
And you don't necessarily have to drink it right away. I mean, you can age this wine a little bit.
Exactly. If you compare with other grapes, like Cabernet Sauvignon or Carignan or whatever, this wine age less than the other grapes.
Mm-hmm.
But when we say less, you can age for 10 years, 15 years, no problem.
Our guest is Chilean winemaker and family member Aurelio Montes of Montes Winery. So we're going to get to the Purple Angel, but you did something in between now. This
exactly.
is the wine that you brought to the festival. Tell us about Montes Wings.
Well, Montes Wings is something completely new. And this Carmenere, what is fun about this new Carmenere is that when you read about Carmenere in a technical book, you're going to see that Carmenere needs clay, needs deep soil, needs rich soil. And that's where we planted Purple Angel.
Mm-hmm.
So one day with my father, we were discussing about where to plant Carmenere, and we say, why don't we go against the current? Why don't we do something completely different? Let's plant in a very steep slope, granitic type of soil, poor soil, and very high, so we receive all the wings coming from the winds coming from the south.
Yeah.
So this is a wine that is a different style. It's a little bit lighter. The color is amazing. It's deep, dark. But in the mouth, it's more lineal.
Yeah.
You have nice grip in the tannins. And it's a little more spicy.
It's more elegant, too, I think. Eh?
Really elegant.
Yeah.
In my point of view, it's more feminine.
Yeah.
It's really, really elegant. It's a type of wine that I recommend to drink the first glass with music. That's it.
Wow.
And the second glass is another thing.
Okay, I like that. Well, this is the 2019 Wings. Is it the first vintage?
It is the first.
Yeah.
Just released.
Yeah.
So we're really excited people have been trying the wine and really love it.
And 2021 has been made? Or
yeah, yeah. All yeah. them are waiting, you know, to yeah. be released. Not all soon, good. Because we need to wait a little bit more.
Yeah.
And but yeah.
Okay. So we've had the Montes Alfa Carmenere, the Montes Wings Carmenere, and now we're going to talk about Purple Angel.
Yeah.
The big the boy. The flagship. The big boy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Purple Angel has been something quite unique for us, to be honest with you. When we start studying about Carmenere, we didn't know what to do. At the beginning, in Chile, we produce a lot of Carmenere, green Carmenere.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The problem with that is that many people in the past try this Carmenere and got confused. Mm-hmm. So we wait 10 years since we discovered Carmenere to release our first pure Carmenere, that's Purple Angel, 2003, sorry. And we decided to do something riper, elegant, but bigger compared with the wings.
Yeah.
So here, what we do, we choose two different terroirs. One from Apalta Valley, that's in the Central Valley, and then another area called Marchihue near the coast, put it together. So we get the power of Marchihue, the soft tannins and elegance of Apalta, and then we added 8% of Petit Verdot to make the wine longer, more complex, with better acidity. So
I remember at the time your father saying, we don't want to be the first, we want to be the best. So when Carmenere was coming out, and then a lot of writers dumped on Carmenere because it was weedy and kind of a strange wine.
Yeah.
And he said, well, no, we're waiting.
We're waiting. We're waiting until we get the confidence to get a nice Carmenere. Yeah. For me, people say Carmenere has to have some green flavors. Yeah. That's a mistake. That's a lie.
Yeah.
You need to have a ripe and spicy wine, not green wine.
No. You know what I like, and maybe in some ways Carmenere could define Montes, but it doesn't define Chile anymore. Like, I think there's so much going on in Chile that it doesn't need a flagship variety. It needs flagship producers more than yeah, varieties, right?
Definitely, yes. And you're very true, because in Chile, it's a very diverse country.
Yeah.
Many type of climates, volcanic soil, near the coast, clay, all clays. So at the end, we discovered in Chile, it's much more fun to play with the diversity.
Yeah.
So we have found Sanso, País, Grenache, Mouvedre, and Carmenere.
Yeah.
And Carmenere.
Yeah.
So it's our friendly of spicy friend.
Your spicy friend.
Spicy friend.
Well, let's leave it at that. So great to catch up with you. Please come back to Vancouver.
Definitely.
Next time you come back, come to the studio. We'll have a nice long discussion about wine in Chile.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah.
I love to come here.
Thanks so much. That was Aurelio Montes Jr. Still to come on our Masterclass 2023, Francois Lurton, owner Domaine Francois Lurton, and one of the original Flying Winemakers.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
At Noble Vines, they believe the best brings out the best. That's why they take only the most admired vines to develop their wines, including the 242 Sauvignon Blanc, which originated in Bordeaux, France. These superior vine stocks adapted well to their premier vineyards in Monterey, California, producing a medium-bodied wine with bright acidity, zesty aromas of ripe lemon, and flavors of golden peach with lime. Available exclusively through BCL Select at your local BC liquor store. Find out more at noblevines.com.
Hello, I'm Anthony Gismondi, and this is Destination Langley, BC. Our guest is Erin Credbaugh. She's the Executive Director at Tourism Langley. Erin, it's the holiday season, so what's happening in Langley to get us in the festive spirit?
Well, Langley has been the backdrop for many TV holiday movies, so visiting this time of year can make you feel like you are stepping onto a holiday movie set. Whether you need to do some gift shopping, find the perfect Christmas tree, enjoy holiday lights, or spend a cozy afternoon in a restaurant, there is something for everyone in Langley.
Well, holiday lights are certainly a popular tradition this time of the year.
Yes, you could go to Glow Gardens, which is a walkable holiday lights, crafts, food trucks, and live performances, or Christmas in Williams Park, which is a drive-through light display that has been in Langley tradition for over 30 years.
Well, another tradition would be picking up the perfect Christmas tree.
Absolutely. I suggest coming to Langley as soon as possible. Our website lists tree farms, but they can sometimes sell out.
And if you're visiting the tree farms, there must be other farms and shops nearby to grab a few items for celebration meals.
That's right. JD Turkey Farms, the Riverside Cranberry Bog, Well Seasoned Gourmet Food Store, and Ralph's Farm Market are a few stops I like to make when hosting a special meal. And of course, a stop or two at one of our wineries is always on my list.
Sounds like the perfect opportunity to get what you need in one day. Anything else we shouldn't miss in Langley this month?
There are many locally owned shops where you can find a gift for anyone on your list. Options include local craft fairs, independently owned stores in historic Fort Langley, Farmgate shops, or the newly renovated Willowbrook Mall, complete with new restaurants so you can keep your energy up as you shop.
And as always, complete details for the events are on your website.
That's right.
Erin, thanks so much.
Thanks, Anthony. Talk to you next time.
For more information, go to tourism-langley.ca. For Destination Langley, BC, I'm Anthony Gismondi. Many people ask me which wines they should buy. My first question is, what do you like? Because when I know what they prefer, I can nudge them left or right to something similar, but often better at the same price. But if you don't like the wine, nothing I can say will change your mind. Taste is a personal thing, so ultimately, it's up to you to find a wine writer who aligns with your taste and start from there. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and I invite you to visit my website, gismondionwine.com, to find out if we can agree on something to drink tonight.
This is BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Happy holidays, British Columbia. Many in the wine business would say 2023 has been a challenging year, but it's about to be all behind us. So our team is more than up for the opportunity to say Happy New Year with a positive outlook for 2024. Joining us now on our year-end masterclass show is Francois Lerton. He's the owner of Domaine Francois Lerton. Francois represents the fourth generation of winemakers in this great family. Before moving into wine, his great-grandfather and his ancestors before him made spirits in the Bordeaux region, which they've been doing since the mid-19th century. Francois is one of those people with high standards. In his own words, terroirs are expressed with a stubborn commitment to organic growing. Here's our masterclass with Francois Lerton. Francois, fantastic to have you on the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you to have invited me, and nice to be there.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about where you're working and all that. Where are you today? I have no idea where you are today.
Today, I am in Charleston, in the southern part of the United States, on the East Coast.
Okay. Well, Francois, really great to catch up with you. You've had a fantastic life in wine, and you've done so many things. But let's just talk about the Francois Lerton wines today. You're working in France, Spain, Argentina, Chile. Does that keep you pretty much busy all the time?
Yes, that keeps me busy all the time. A lot of traveling, and myself. I want to be sure that I produce a good wine. I want to be sure that I produce good grapes.
Yeah.
So I oblige all my team to follow to let me test all the berries before to harvest them. So that obliged me to be in my April March for the harvest in South America, and to be in Europe September, mainly in September, to taste all the berries.
Yeah, you're very big on organic growing, biodynamics. You care a lot about the vineyards. You grew up in a society that was focused on terroir, but things have changed in the vineyard, and you've been one of those people driving it. Can you tell us about the importance of why you want to grow organically today?
Myself, I'm born in the vineyards, and I have been one of the first, thanks to my father, to develop the grafting of the vineyard and to develop new varieties and things in Bordeaux. But myself traveling everywhere in the world, I was definitely totally interested by all the this world of organic and especially biodynamic. I had difficulties to believe in the what was the biodynamic at the start. Now I am much more convinced. And
And also, I think also there were a problem of mentalities that I've seen, especially in Bordeaux. People very extremely reluctant to go back to the tradition, to what they were doing 100 mm-hmm. years ago. And we have had it has been almost a work of a generation to convince people to go back to their. To the tradition and to go back to something more natural.
Our guest is François Lerton. He's the owner of Domaines François Lerton. What do you think when people talk to you, and I want to talk about a couple wines here, when you're making a wine in the Uco Valley in Argentina, Chacayas, and you're also in Colchagua making the Clos de Lalol from Araucano, these places have their own terroir, and they're making excellent wine. Do you compare them to the great wines of Bordeaux now, or do you think they're different or the same, or how do you see these wines?
No, myself, what I love in the wine world is the diversity. So you never eat the same thing every day. So why to taste the same thing? So people who say, I love Margaux, I drink only Margaux, it must be extremely boring in your life. Yeah. And to drink only boring, only Bordeaux or only Margaux, if it is good. Myself, I try to develop the diversity and to show the differences in every places. So I don't travel with the recipe. I hate to make the wine the same way everywhere. I try to understand what the people they do in every countries and to develop a true expression of the variety in this country. I produce Sauvignon Blanc, for example, in many countries, and none of these Sauvignon Blanc are similar. They all have their own identity. And that is what is my target, I would say my intention, what I want to do and to develop that.
Well, I think when I first started following you, one of the things that impressed me most was in a very simple way, the cleanliness of your wines and the precision of your wines. And I thought, well, if someone can make a clean wine in an area where no one else is, then it must be possible for a lot of other people to do that. And I want to shift that conversation now to quite a famous label for you, La Fumée Blanche. You have made an orange Sauvignon Blanc, which just shocks me. But the wine is fantastic. So tell me, why are you making an orange wine now?
And the first thing, myself, I was... I'm born in the region of white wine of Bordeaux, so I have been all my life managed by the acidity. You know, I am an acidity lover. The acidity is the backbone of the wine. So if you find my wine fresh, fruity, and clean, it's thanks to the control of the acidity. And the second thing, to make the body around this structure, which is the acidity, you must have tannins, you must have alcohol. And for that, the best is to macerate the skin and the juice. So my father already was doing it. He teaches us, my brother and myself also, this way of doing it. We were always putting a little bit of macerated white wine with skin in our blend. And today we have decided to separate this maceration and still we put in our blend of dry wines, traditional, a little bit of orange wines.
Yeah.
But we have decided to make a true orange wines. But the Fumée Blanche is not a true orange wine. So the true orange wines macerate much more time. It's more what we call a skin contact, what we have in the Fumée Blanche.
Right.
It's because we stop maceration after fermentation, and we are to obtain a wine which is in between, a little bit between the world of the orange wines and the classic dry whites, to have something which is fruity but structured at the same time.
Yeah. And, it's really a delicious wine, François. I'm quite impressed with it, and I think people are going to really like what they see when they taste it. Let's talk about Uco, because you've had a long history in Argentina. Argentina is finally sort of finding its feet, you know, internationally at a higher level. You're making a great wine down there, Chacayas. What's so special about Mendoza and the Uco?
Yeah, when I have arrived in Mendoza, I have started to sell some wine, especially. I have been extremely successful thanks to in your region somebody named Pierre Doise, who were selling a lot of my wine, Select Wine, in your region.
Yeah.
And thanks to him, I've sold a lot of wine to Canada and decided to build my own winery. And building my own winery, I decided to buy in a region which was a desert, which was the center of the Valle de Uco. And after me has arrived other producers. And slowly by slowly, is the most crowded part of Mendoza, and the better known part of Mendoza today for high quality vineyards. And the whole producers have asked me if I could give them back the name that I had registered for my top wine, which is the name of the area,
yep.
Named Los Chacayes. And I had registered this name. And so we have decided with the INEV to create an IG, an indication geographical, allowing to everybody to put Los Chacayes and their label as a geographical indication. And myself, I am the only one who can use it as a brand.
Yeah.
A little bit like Chateau Margaux in Margaux appellation.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I love the wine. This wine, L'Esprit de Chacayes 2022, is available in Vancouver now, $43.99. And it's a wine that I would say it probably lives 10 to 15 years, no problem in the bottle.
Ah, sure. It's thanks to this variety, the Malbec, which is the very interesting variety, especially in Argentina, who give us wines which have an incredible capacity of aging.
By the way, I'm speaking with François Lertan. I want to talk a little bit about Chile, and maybe how hard is it for you to understand how a country like Chile can establish itself, because it's still fighting to establish itself at a much higher level in the world of wine. But you've made a fantastic wine in Colchagua. What about Araucano and what you're doing down there in the Colchagua Valley?
In the Colchagua Valley, I've been a member of the association of the producers there. I've tried to transform this association in a green valley, but I did not succeed. But there is a lot of green producers. Chile is a paradise for green producers. And I've been the first in biodynamy. Today we are 13 Chileans certified in a biodynamy, and we are quite a dynamic organization, organic and biodynamic, and in general, Chile does not have the disease that we have in Argentina and a lot of in Europe, and it's much easier to produce organic wines.
Yeah.
And myself, I have established on the cooler part of the Valle de Colchagua, which is what we call the Colchagua Coast. Yeah, where we can produce very interesting whites and also some Pinot Noir, because Colchagua is quite a warm area where they have the Apalta Valley, Colchagua is quite warm in general and hot even. But us, we are in much cooler part with a lot of maritime influence.
Well, the time goes by so fast, François, but it was so great to have a quick chat with you today about these wines. We'll be putting the information out for our readers. Will we see you in Canada sometime soon?
Yes, yes. I tried to come back. Additionally, I am a mountain lover and a ski lover, so I try to come back to take profit of your best slopes.
Right on. Well, François, thanks so much for your time. I know you're busy. The harvest is on still in the Northern Hemisphere, and we wish you luck with that. And maybe we'll catch up with you later in the year down in South America.
Thank you, Anthony. Thank you for your call.
That was François Lertan, owner Domaine François Lertan. That's it for today's show, and that's a wrap for 2023 for the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. 52 unique shows, hundreds of inspiring conversations, and most of all, 25 cities across British Columbia now enjoying our wine conversations each week. From our team to you, Happy New Year, and cheers to opening a very special bottle on New Year's Eve or any time before Sunday. You all deserve it. Special thanks to our technical producer in Vancouver, Dwayne Bishop, assignment editor Sherry Caleb, and our on-the-road producer Mike Whittingham, as well as our director of operations Stu Ferguson. All of them make this show work every day of the year. For all of us at the show, I'm Anthony Gismondi, wishing you a very happy and prosperous new year.
That's it for today's show. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.